Alright, supposed to say good morning. So today's daf is Tzadik Tas. So we left off on the last line of Tzadik Ches Amud Beis Tan Rabbah. So let's again just to reorient ourselves a little bit. We're talking in the Mishkan. And talking about yesterday, we focused on the lengths and the widths. After getting into a discussion about the Agolos, right, about whether or not the area underneath the Agolos is the Rosh Hasharabim. So the Gemara kind of launches into a discussion about the Mishkan itself, specifically focusing on the Krushim as well as on the Yerios. It says the Gemara, Tanra Abanan, Charutzim Hayu Krushim, V'chalulim Hayu Adonim. The Krushim, the boards, or literally Charutzim means chiseled. What that means is, look at Rashi, Charutzim Hayu Krushim, Kimo Shech Rashti Chatzi Ama Be'emtza Rachba Milamato. I'm sorry, I read that wrong. Charutzim Hayu Krushim, Kimo Shech Rashti Chatzi Ama Be'emtza Rachba Milamato, Begova Ama, Vinish Orin Hayodos Lekan Ulekan. So also, there's a little bit of a picture, you can see it, I think everybody has in the Gemara, you can see it, there's a picture over there in Rashi, where essentially the Krushim came down with two pegs on the bottom. Two pegs on the bottom. So that's what it means when it says it was chiseled, it wasn't a flat bottom, but it came out two pegs on the bottom. Now, what was the chap of those two pegs? V'chalulim hayu adonim. And the adonim, the sockets, were hollow. So what happened is that the two points, the two peg legs, we'll call it, of the krushim fit into the sockets, fit into the silver socket that was able to anchor the krushim. V'nirin, top of tzadik des, v'nirin krusim bilulos ki kochavim berakia. This is a beautiful, beautiful idea as well. And the hooks, the silver hooks in the loops, looked like stars in the sky. Now, what does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. Rashi points out over here, near and crossing the lows, the hooks that were in the loops, milsa achrisihi. So Rashi says, first of all, this is a totally different topic. Not a different topic. It's not talking about the Mishkan, but it's not talking about the Krushim anymore. So what is it saying? So, shtei machboros hayu hayirios kol achas va'achas hayirios tfuros zuim zubamachat al pnei kol argon. So also, what the Gemara is talking about over here is the following: that in order to go ahead and link the various panels of curtains, so they were sewn together, but there were also loops on them, and there were silver hooks that connected the various. It was just an extra way of keeping the panels together. So what the Gemara is just pointing out over here is that the glimmer of the loops against the backdrop of the curtains had the appearance of the stars in the sky. Beautiful image. Tanra Abana. Yirios hatachtonos shel tcheles shel argaman shel tolas shani. The bottom curtains, remember, there were multiple layers that comprised the roof of the Mishkan. So the bottom layers, Yiros HaTachtonos, the bottom curtains, were made of Tcheles, Argamon, Tolas, Shani. So Tcheles, remember, is blue color, Argamon is purple color, Tolas, Shani is red. So it was made out of all of these different dyes, all these different colors. Vishel Sheish, and ultimately made of linen as well. The Elyonos, and the upper one, Shel Ma'aseizim, was made of goat hair. It was made of goat hair. So the Gemara says, Ugdola Chachma Sh'amra Be'elyonos Yosem Mimash Ne'emra Betachtonos. And apparently there was greater wisdom necessary in making the top curtain, which was the goat hair one, more than the bottom ones. Why? The Ilu Betachtonos Ksiv, because when it comes to the bottom covers, the bottom, we'll call it the bottom curtain. When I say curtain, I don't know the reason. I don't like using the term, even though, because curtain sounds like something that goes along the sides. This, of course, is a curtain. This is a roof. This is a roof. That's how we translate Yirios, panels, curtains. But Shlitzin is referring to the actual roof of the Mishkan. So the Ilu B'tachtonos, in the bottom layer of the roof, it says, Ksiv v'chol isha chachmas leif, and every woman who had a wise heart, biyadeha tavu, would sew together, would weave together, or would spin it together. The ilu be'elyonos, and in the upper curtain it says, V'chol hanashim asher nasa liban osana b'chachma tabu esayizim. So what's the Gemara is contrasting the lashon when it comes to making the lower curtains. So it used lashon chachma slave. We have to be very wise when it comes to making the upper curtain. What does it say? It's a much more dramatic lashon. Asher nasa liban osana b'chachma. There's this nasiu slave, which would indicate that the making of the upper curtain required more chachma than the making of the lower curtain. Now, why is that? Rabbi said we had this before. Tanya, the Tanya of Yishum Rabbi Nechemya, shut off be'izin, v'tavoy mina'izin. Why did making the goat hair curtain require more chachma? We saw this before. Because remember, how did they make it? They made it out of the hair while it was still attached to the goat. Right? The whole chaf was this, that apparently the goat hair, the wool, loses some of its luster after you go ahead and detach it. So they actually washed the wool, spun the wool while it was on the goat itself. Essentially, in order to be able to just cut it off the goat at the last possible moment, to be able to keep its luster. So you can imagine, you can imagine how complicated a process like that ultimately is. So therefore, says the Gemara, that's why the making of the goat hair curtain required additional chachma over the Tchelis Argaman and Tola Ashani. So now the Gemara goes back to the Mishnah. So you remember again, the Mishnah spoke about the following Gusturah, said that if you had these two Gusturahs, remember the Gusturah was this balcony that does not have an unwalled balcony, an unrailed balcony. So the Mishnah said the following, that if you have Shtei Gusturahs, Zu Kineged Zu Birshus Harabim, so the halacha is if you have two balconies facing each other across Birshus Harabim, then if you go ahead and motion zorek, if you throw or if you hand, you're potter. However, if the two gusturos are next to each other on the same side of the Rosh Sarabim, but the Rosh Sarabim interposes between them, then what? Then halacha lemaisa, you're chayiv. Right? Actually, it says hamoshit chayiv zorek potter. If you throw your chayiv, if you hand your chayiv, if you throw your potter, why? Because that resembles that which was done in the Midbar. Because remember, as we spoke about before, the handing in the Midbar was done from front Agola to the back Agola, but was not done across. So says the Gemara, Amirav Mishum Rabbi Chiya, Agolos Tachtehen Ubeinehen Vitzidehen Rishus Harabim. So we'll say, quoting what we said before, when it comes to the Agolos, when it comes to the actual wagons, underneath them, between them and the sides of them are all considered to be Rishus HaRabim. Now, Rabbi said, just so you understand these terms. So underneath them, we understand. Beinehem means the area between the two wagons. Right? We'll discuss that as well. And Tzideihen. Now, Tzideihen means the sides of the wagons. Now, we're going to see Tzideihen means the distance really between the body of the wagon and the end of the wheel. And the end of the wheel, that was also a space. So any of these areas are considered to be Rishus HaRabim. Amar Abaye, Bein Agola La Agola, Kimole Orech Agola. So Abaye says that between each of the wagons, and this is talking about sideways, right, between each of the wagons was an area the size of a wagon itself. So the Gemara says, Kimole Orech Agola, Vekama Orech Agola, so how much was, right, how much was the Agola? What was the length of the Agola? We saw this yesterday. Hey, Amos. There were five Amos. Five Amos. So the Gemara says, one second. Lamali bedalit upalga sagi. So I'll say, look what the Gemara says. Rashi. Bein Agola la Agola shebitzida. Right? So meaning between each wagon was a length of a wagon. Between each wagon, shebitzida. Hey, Amos, kemali orech Agola. So Rashi points out over here, Lamali, why did you need five Amos in between each of the Agolos? After all, Bedalut Upal Gasagi, 4.5 Amos would have been enough. Look at Rashi. Ba'arba Upal Gasagi, Shemisadron Al Rachban, Eno Misadir Al Hei Amos Yoser Migimel, Vahari Arba Umechza Yochol Misadron, Vi Misadron Bichudon Yoser Midalado Yisadir, Mipne Havsakos Mokom Habrichim, Shere Emsa Astarim, Obapalga Aminavi Tesagi, the Shabbos, what the Gemara says is like this, that Halacha Lamaisa, why did you need a length of five Amos for the actual wagon itself? Right? After Halacha Lamaisa, we already said this yesterday, 4.5 would have been enough as well. Right? No matter how you're arranging the board, whether you're arranging the boards on their flat side or on their width, it would have been enough. To which the Gemara says, Hechi delo litchaku krashin, in order that the boards not hit each other. Right? We want a little bit of a space of the boards in between each other. Rashi says, delo litchaku in balasajar arachban. If really where this comes up is if you're going to go ahead and lay down the boards on their flat side, you don't want them rubbing against each other, because if they rub against each other, that could lead to wearing down of the boards. Amar Rava, see the agala, the sides of the agala, kimali rachav agala, were like the width of the actual agala. Now what that means is that the area between the body of the wagon and the end of the wheel was the equivalent of the actual width of the, I guess we'll call it like the cab of the wagon. Now we'll say what they're talking about over here is if you add up the shirim of the two sides, so the area between the side of the wagon and the end of the wheel on this side of the wagon, end of the wheel on that side, if you add those two areas up, that's the equivalent to the width of the actual body of the wagon. And how much is that, says the Gemara? The Kama, Rachav Agala. And why? And what was the size? What was the width of the body of the cab of the cabin of the cab the body of the wagon? So the Gemara says Shte Amos Umechta. It was 2.5 amos, 2.5 amos wide. Okay. So I'll say just so you understand what that means is that according to these measurements, so if the body of the agola was 2.5 amos wide, it means what? That the span between the side of the agola and the end of the wheel was 1.25 amos on each side. So you have 1.25 amos span between the end of the cab of the wagon and the end of the wheel on each side, which means that the equivalent of those two areas is equal to the width of the wagon itself. So the Gemara says, Lamali, why do you need such a wide wagon? Ba'amsa upalga sagya. The truth is, if you would have made it 1.5 amos wide, it would have been enough as well. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, "Lamali roch batarti upalga in miteshim yitztarich lahoshim min akrashim lesocho yachnis ba'am sopalga sagi v'yashkivein al chudan." The idea would be, Rabosai, in this kind of case, if you were to go ahead and rest the boards on their narrow side, having a wagon that's only 1.5 amos wide would have been more than enough. To which the Gemara says, "Ki hechi delo lidadu krashin." To which the Gemara answers, "Because we don't want the boards to move around." That's the idea, that you want to make the body of the wagon a little. Even though you're right, you could have gotten by with a body of 1.5 amos wide, but that would have run the risk of, you know, again, remember, also traveling in the desert, lav dafka, that it's flat the entire time. Although, again, you know, the Gemara brings down that the Anan flattened out the earth in front of them. I don't know if that literally means that it was a smooth course the entire time. So the Gemara is saying is if it's a narrow wagon, so the boards are going to move, making it a little bit wider ensures a certain amount of stability for the boards once they're on top of the wagon. So the Gemara says the following. Ella, dekaimalon, derech roshos harabim, sheish esrei ama. Sheish esrei ama. Ana digamrinon lav mishkan, chamisar havoi. So we'll say, listen to this. What the Gemara says is like this. We'll see this more later on, we'll say. This is really good. We're going to spend an Erev and a good amount of time on this. But the Gemara explains that there's a shear for Rosh Hashanah, meaning what makes something into a public domain. So we're going to discuss the idea that it has to have a certain width, and it also has to have a certain amount of pedestrian traffic. So in terms of the width, the halacha is that it has to be at least 15 amos wide. Right? 15 amos wide. So the Gemara says, 16 amos wide, excuse me. Derech Shalom Sheish Esrei Amah has to be 16 amos wide. Why? Now the Gemara says, now Rabosai, we would assume that Halacha Lemaisa, everything that we're doing Lagabe Shabbos is learned from where? From Mishkan. Which means that where are we going to be getting our dimensions for Rosh Hashanah? The Pashtos from the desert, from what happened in the desert. Now the Gemara says, when it came to the desert, Anan Zigamrin Alemi Mishkan, the Mishkan Chamisre Havi. So the Gemara says, when it comes to the Mishkan, the truth is, all they needed for the width of their Rosh Sarabim, so to speak, meaning, what does that mean? The width that they needed to travel would have been what? Would have been 15 amos. And I will say, where do you get that number from? So remember what the Gemara said before, that technically speaking, when each Agala is how wide? 5 amos. And each Agala traveled with the width of an Amma in between it, which means that the span from one side to the other side of where they're traveling is 15 amos. Now, I just want to point out, In reality, it was actually they actually took up a space of more than 15 amos. Why? Because of the crushing, because of the boards. Now remember, what the Gemara is saying is, even if you had a situation where, let's say, for some reason you didn't have the boards on the agala, you still needed five. Right? Each wagon took up five amos, and you had the five amos of space. When the boards were on there, the wagons actually had to be further apart because the boards were long. But halacha lemaisa, the Gemara is saying that the minimum shear would have been 15 amos. So the Gemara says, if the width then of, we'll call it a desert, Rishus HaRabim, in their time would have been 15 amos, then why does the Gemara say that the shear for Rishus HaRabim is 16 amos? Where does that extra amma come from? To which the Gemara says, very interesting. Anadir Amrei Mishkan, Chamisrei Havi, Amsa Yisira Havi. So the Gemara says, no, there was an extra amma. Why? The Havakoi ben Levi, dechi mishtal v'krashim hava naket luhu. So also, this is amazing. Why did they add an extra amma of space? Because there was always one of the members of Levi that always walked by the wagons. Why? Because inevitably, what could happen? The boards shift. So in order to ensure that if the boards shift, the Levi would go ahead and get them back in order, so there was an extra amma of space for the Levi to walk there as well. Therefore, in calculating the shear of the Rishus HaRabim, there is the 15 amma span plus the extra amma for the Levi.
Mission. So it's five times.
The front. The crushing were set in the agolas front back, right? Not sideways. They were
across. Width. They were perpendicular.
The traveling of the agolas.
Correct. They were traveling to the body. They were perpendicular to the body of the agala.
I don't know how you go.
So their tents are 2.5 feet.
Correct.
Agala is 5.
It's 2 wide. No, it's 3 wide. Correct. No. You have 2 agalas, but you need the space of an agala in between the 2 agalas.
You need to have some sort of space.
The truth is, that's what I'm saying. In reality, it's saying you need 5 agalas even when they're empty. When they were full, there was actually when they were carrying the wood, there was actually greater space. But the point is, Gemara is saying the minimum amount of space would have been 15 amos across.
And the crushing themselves were more than 5 amos, right?
Correct. That's what I'm saying. When they traveled with the wood on it, they were in actuality even further apart. It was actually wider. What the Gemara is saying is that even when they were unladen, if that's the word, even when they were not carrying anything, there had to be at least 15 amos across.
Well, they still were, even with the crushing, they could still be 15 amos.
No, they'd have to be longer. They'd have to be longer. 10 amos each.
Yeah, so if it's centered on the thing, you have...
I guess you could have done it like that.
Five.
No, it would be, no. By definition, it's 20 amos across then.
No.
Yeah, from
They're centered on their wagons.
No, but from one end of the Keresh to the other end of the Keresh is 20.
It's only under the agala.
Already centered on the wagons means that they hang over 2.5 on each side. Right. So that's 5 in the middle.
The agalas are still...
No, but if the crushing are 10 amos tall, then no matter how you arrange it, from the end of one carriage to the end of the other carriage, it's 20 amos.
Go under the crushing, it goes under the agalas.
Fighter.
Not under, on top of the crushing. On top of the agalas.
I know. I'm saying Rishus Aram is under the agalas.
Oh, you're measuring on the underside of it.
Are we?
No, but I'm just pointing out the following idea. I'm just pointing out that, again, that Halach Lamais, when they were carrying the crushing, the span, obviously, from one end of the crushim to the other end of the crushim was always going to be 20 amos. That's my point. That is all the Gemara is saying over here. The reason why the Gemara is getting 15 is just that if there was no crushim on the agalos, by definition, would take up a space of 15 amos. Five amos for each wagon, plus a 5 amma space in between the wagons. So that becomes the minimum shear for the Rosh Hashanah. Plus, now we're seeing there's actually an extra amma in there for the space for the Levi to walk. All right, is that an ESG over here on the Agalos? All right, let's go. Vaiter, says the Mishnah. Chulyas Habor. All right, so now the Gemara is getting back to Rishus HaRabim, or the dimensions of Rishuyos. So Chulyas Habor means literally the lip, or the edge. Chulya literally means a pile. Right? So here what we're going to see is the following. You dig a pit, so the truth is if you take the dirt out of the pit and you pile it around the opening of the pit, that's called the Chulya. So the Gemara says, Chulyas Habor, v'hasela shehin gevon asar, v'rach ban arba. So we'll say, if you have a Chulyas Habor, so if you have... this lip, Rashi says, Karka Chafiras Habor, Nosnin Sivivosa Lahakif Kimin Choma. So now you have the dirt that's taken from the pit, and you put it by the edge of the pit to build up.
It's not a berm.
A berm?
Berm.
B-U-R-M.
B-R-M.
A berm. Okay, so good. You have this chulya, and then what happens? Or you have a rock. I will say, now the Mishnah says, if the dimensions of the pit or the dimensions of the rock are 10 tefachim high, right, 10 tefachim high, and rach ban arba, with the width of 4, then halacha lemaisa, they have the status of a rishus harabim. And therefore, hanotel mehen, v'hanosin al gabon, chayef. And therefore, if somebody takes something from that, or puts something on it, which is another way of saying, if you transfer the item from one rishus to another, then halacha lemaisa, you're chayef. Pachos mikan, but if the item does not conform to these dimensions, then potter. Then halacha lemaisa, you're potter, because obviously at that point in time, the item becomes a makom patur. So the Gemara says, lama li b'misnei chulya sabor, v'hasala, why do you need to go ahead? What the Gemara is saying over here is the lashon over here is interesting. Why do you have to say chulya sabor? Why are you making this about the lip of the bar? It's about the bar. Why don't you just say simpler? So habor v'hasala. Listen, habor v'hasala. Why don't you just say that if you have a pit or you have a rock that has the dimensions of 10 high and 4 wide, that halacha lemaisa, you're chayiv for that. When you say you're chayiv, means that constitutes a separate rishos. And therefore, if you were to transfer an item from it or to it, you would be chayiv on Shabbos. To which the Gemara says, no. Misayele the Rabbi Yochanan. This comes to support the view of Rabbi Yochanan. What does Rabbi Yochanan say? Dam Rabbi Yochanan, bor v'chul yoso mitstarfin la'asara. That halacha lemaisa, that a pit and its lip or its berm, right, could go ahead and combine for the shear of asara, for the shear of ten tefachim. Now I will say, what's the chiddush of that? The chiddush of that is what you're really doing is you are including two different dimensions. You're including depth and you're including height. So I might have thought that halacha lemaisa for the shear of height, you have to make a choice. Either use height or either use depth. Kamash malon, that no. So you could go ahead and dig 9 down and take that dirt and pile it 1 tefach high, and that's your shear 4 ten tefachim. To which the Gemara says, Tayinam Yachir Abraisa, that supports this. Bar Birshus Harabim Amoko Yud Urechava Arba. If you have a pit in Rishus Harabim that is 10 deep and 4 wide, Ein Memalin Haimena B'Shabbos. You cannot fill up anything from it on Shabbos. Which I will say is another way of saying the halacha lemaisa. So let's say you can't draw water from that on Shabbos, because what would you effectively be doing? You'd be transporting an item from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim. So the Gemara says, Amad Beis, Elo Imkein Asula Mechitza Gavoa Yud Tfachim. Unless, of course, what did you do? Unless, of course, you made a Mechitza that's 10 Tfachim high. That's 10 Tfachim high. I will say, now what does that mean? Now what you could do, we'll see, is you could enclose that area, right? So if you were to go ahead and enclose that area, you would then make it into Rosh Hashayachid. If that's the case, then you can draw water from the well.
Where is this bar? Is it on his property and Hashayachid?
No, of course not. If it's in Rosh Hashayachid, then it's yours.
Yeah, but then if he digs, according to this...
That's still Rosh Hashayachid. This is Rosh Hashayachid.
So the bar is already Rosh Hashayachid.
Right, but the bar itself has the dimensions of Rosh Hashayachid. The bor is situated in Rosh Hashanah, but the bor has the dimensions of a Rosh Hashanah.
Now, when you talk dimensions, one other question.
That's
four tefachim wide. What
about the length? So it's a four tefach square. Correct. We're going to get into that. But right now, let's assume we're talking about a four tefach square. So the Gemara says the following. Ve'in shosin imena b'Shabbos, ela imkein hichnis rosho imhichnis la rosho v'rubo. So we'll say again. So now the Gemara says like this. Bryson that supports this idea. So now you have this bar that's in Rosh Sarabim, right? Bar that's in Rosh Sarabim, but the bar itself has the dimensions of a Rosh Hashayachid. So it's 10 tefachim deep. Has this 4 tefach area as well. So the Gemara says you can't go ahead and fill up from it because that would be an act of otzah. Unless, of course, you do one of two things. Either build a mechitza around it, that's possibility one. Build a partition around it, which then makes the surrounding area into Rosh Hashayachid as well, in which case then you could draw out of it. Or the other possibility is, Ela Imkein, Hichnis Bo, Hichnis La, Rosho Verubo. The other possibility is, what should you do? Lean the majority of your body over the well. I'm not sure that this is the best piece of advice, but this at least allows you to drink from it on Shabbos. Right? So now what it's saying is, lean the majority of your body over the well. Now what does that do? So Rashi says, Imkin hichnis rosha verubo limokom shu shosa. What that does is, because you are leaning the majority of your body over the well, then halacha lemaaseh, there's no concern that you're going to take the water out with you, because the assumption is you're going to essentially drink the water right there, essentially over the well, and therefore there's no fear of hotzah. However, the Gemara says, ubor v'chulyaso mitstarfin la'asara, and a pit and its rim combined to form the depth or the shear of asara, of ten tefachim. So we'll say here again, you have all the reason the Gemara is quoting this is not really because you care about the well all that much, but because we're bringing this as a proof to Rabbi Yochanan. Halacha lemaisa, height and depth can combine to form the requisite shear for a rishus hayochid. Ba'amine Rav Mordechai me Rava. So Rav Mordechai asked the following shayla of Rava. What's a very interesting case? Amud v'yeshus harabim. Let's say you have amud is literally a pillar. You have a pillar in rishus harabim. Gavoha yud v'rachav dalim, and it's 10 tefachim high and 4 tefachim wide. Okay. So now the Gemara says, v'zorach uvenach al gabov. And what happens? You throw an object, so we'll say again, so just imagine this idea. So you have this pillar, and it has the requisite height and the requisite, we'll call it width or area, we'll call it area, first sayachim. I now throw an object onto it, and the object comes to rest on the rishus hayachim. Okay? So the question is, mahu? What is the halach? So we'll say, you say to yourself, well, that seems like a pretty open and shut case. What's the shari? The assumption is, where am I standing? I'm standing in Rosh Sarabim. So it's pretty pashtet. I'm standing in Rosh Sarabim. I've just thrown an object into Rosh Hashayachid. What have I done? I've done an act of Otsa, or I'm really Hachnasa. So what's the Shaila? Listen to this. Mi Aminan, Havi Akira Be'iser, Hari Hanacha Be'iser. So on one end you can say, okay, I did an Akira Be'iser. I lifted up an object in one Roshos, and I threw it into another Roshos, and I'm Chayiv. Oh, people, listen to this. Kevan, Demi Mako Ptur Ka'asya Lo. So we'll say, this is amazing. What an interesting and fascinating shayla. So the Gemara says, well, let's understand the process over here. If I'm standing, if I have a pole that's 10 tefachim high, how high am I going to have to throw the object for it to land on the Rosh Sarabim?
10 plus.
More than 10 tefachim. What's above 10 tefachim in Rosh Sarabim? Makom Ptur. Which essentially means what? My object has left Rosh Sarabim, gone into a Makom Ptur, and come back down to rest on the Rosh Hashayachid. So, well, that's the question. I shouldn't say like a definitive statement. That's the Shaila. On one hand, we can say, look, you did Nakira in Rosh Sarabim, and Hanoch in Rosh Hashayachid Yechayiv. On the other hand, maybe we'll say, the object did travel through a Makom Ptur before it ultimately came down and came to rest in Rosh Hashayachid. Does that Makom Ptur, does that millisecond in the Makom Ptur essentially go ahead and disconnect the Akira from the Hanocha, in which case we'd not be chayiv.
You'd be matir every game of catch.
I'm sorry?
You'd be matir every game of catch.
You'd be matir every game of catch.
Throw over.
Every game of catch if two people are setting into different rishios. Right.
Throw over 10 miles.
Right. You have a lot of free time on Shabbos if you want to have a Rosh Hashayachid to Rosh Hashayachid catch. Right. You can halakhically structure it. Right. I'm just saying, most times in a person having catch, they're in the same rishios. Although you
no,
I'm
no,
saying,
no, no, no.
Oh, no, no, you're saying even two people in Rosh Sarabim throw it high. Good, 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 good. All right, if there's one thing you get from a second Shabbos. All right, so says the Gemara, but no, that's an interesting point. So the Gemara says the following. So I was like, so that's the this is the Shabbos. The Gemara's asking, so how do we deal with this case? Amalei. So remember, this is Rav Mordechai was asking this of Rava. So Amalei. So Rava responds, Masnisin he. It's a Mishnah. Okay. So the Gemara says, so Rashi points out over here, Masnisin hi, Hanotel mehen, Vahanosin al Gabon chayiv. So I will say, interestingly enough, so Rava responds and he says it's a Mishnah. He's referring to our Mishnah, where our Mishnah says that if you have this pillar, remember our Mishnah kind of had a very specific, similar type of case, that you have this boar or you have this sela that has the requisite dimensions of 10 height, 4 depth, or 4 area, that halacha lemaisa, you're chayiv for putting and taking on it. So it seemed to indicate that halacha l'maisa, even if the object dips into another rishus, as long as it comes to rest in the rishus, you're going to be chayiv. So what happens? So all Rava tells Rav Mordechai is, it's a Mishnah. Okay, but he doesn't tell Rav Mordechai what? He doesn't tell Rav Mordechai which Mishnah, or how exactly the Mishnah answers it. Asa shayla l'Rav Yosef. So Rav Mordechai goes then, and he goes and he asks Rav Yosef, Amar le'imas nisini. And Rav Yosef says, oh, good shayla, it's an ikum beforish the Mishnah. But again, it doesn't explain what. Asa shayla l'Abaye. Rav Mordechai goes to ask Abaye, Amar le'imas nisini. He said, oh, shkoyach, it's a Mishnah. Amar lehu. So Rav Mordechai at this point is getting a little bit exasperated, and he says, kulchu beroka dahadadi tafisu. Literally, you are all spitting the same spit. All right, take this. What he's saying is, everybody's telling me the same exact thing. Why doesn't anyone just give me a straight answer? Okay, I got it. It's a Mishnah. What's the answer? So the Gemara says, Amrlei, v'at lo tizbira. Do you not know the Mishnah? V'hatnan. But the Mishnah says, hanot amehen, v'nosin al gabon chayiv. The Mishnah explicitly says that if you take something from one of these rishuyos, or you put something on it, you're chayiv. Then I'll say again, it's quite possible that, let's say, when you're putting something on top of this pillar, on top of this rock that has the dimensions of Rosh Hashanah, you may be dipping into a higher area in order to go ahead and put it down. But it doesn't matter. We say when the Akira occurs in one rishus and the Hanacha occurs in another rishus, you're going to be chayiv. To which the Gemara says, the following, Amarle, see, he responded, Dilma Masnisin Bemechat. Maybe the Mishnah is talking about a case of a needle. Right? And remember, why does it choose a mechat? It chooses a mechat, a needle, because the truth is a needle is something that's very small. So the truth is, maybe the needle, you could throw a needle and it could land onto the other rishus without it really extending really significantly into the makom p'tur. The little bit that it would extend to the makom p'tur is not significant, and maybe that's the case where you're chayiv. So dil masis mechat, mechat nami, so the Gemara says, no, even with the needle, if you remember, also going back to this case of the throwing, if you're going to be throwing the needle, it's impossible that the needle wouldn't extend a little bit into the Makom Petur as well. So the other possibility is the Islay Marsha. Maybe it has Marsha. Marsha is a protrusion. Look at Rashi for just a moment, Rabosai. So the Gemara says the following. So the Gemara says, the Islay, Lisela Morsha Namuch Miyut. Maybe the rock has a protrusion that is lower than 10 Tfach. That's what the 10 Tfach. The Chavim Vesula Gavoa Yud Barmiahi Marsha. The Ihula Havi Makum Choshuv Havi Chorush Tziyachim. So actually, Gemara brings up a very interesting case. Maybe, the case over here, let's say by the seller, by the Mishnah, is where the object has a protrusion that's within 10. And I will say, watch this. If the object has a protrusion that's within the height of 10 tefachim, that's called what we call Tzidei Rosh Hashayachid. Tzidei Rosh Hashayachid means that you could have something that is like a corner. Protrusion, like the offshoot of Rosh Hashayachid. So what we're suggesting over here is you could have a case where you could throw an item from Rosh Hashayachid, from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashayachid, without the object transferring into a makom p'tur. How? By throwing the object, let's imagine if the seller has a protrusion, I could throw it, let's say, a little bit higher, but it's still within 10, and it lands on the protrusion of the seller. Now that protrusion is still considered to be rishus hayachid, but yet what? But the object did not have to go out of the airspace of 10 and come back in. All the Gemara is trying to figure out is a case of where you could essentially throw an object from a Rosh Sayochid onto a high Rosh Sayochid, from Rosh Sarabin onto a Rosh Sayochid without the object having to go through the Makom Ptur of Lamala Miyut. That's all the Gemara is trying to figure out over here. This thing, Marsha, Inami, Duramya Becharitza. Or the other possibility, Duramya Becharitza, look at Rashi. Ramya Becharitza, Rashi says, Machat Becharit Shevesela Sheberosho, Velo Nafal Lamala Miyut Ela Lesoch Yud. Okay, so the Gemara says, or the rock itself has some kind of charitz. Charitz literally means like a furrow. It has some kind of piece that's carved out in it, that essentially, again, the needle could fall into the charitz without it having to extend into the makom p'tur. Amar Rav Meisha, Boy Rav Yochanan, Kolisel bishul. So I'll say halacha lemaisa. Halacha lemaisa. What comes out in that particular case? So again, what the Gemara essentially says is, in that particular situation, we could structure the case in such a way where the object can be transferred from the Rosh Sayachid to the Rosh Sarabin without it going through the Makom Patur. Let's say an object did go through a Makom Patur. What would be the halacha? The halacha would be that should be pater. You would not be chayav for such an act of altzah, because Rabbi said, remember, I want to just point something out that's very important. Even though we passed in earlier that we do not say kluta k'mishul chadavya, right? We do not say that when an object passes through a rishus, that it's as if it's that rishus. The one exception will be the makom patur of a rishus harabin. That if an object does go through the makom patur of a rishus harabin, halacha lemaisa, that object, that disconnects the akira and the hanacha. So in this particular case, if you were to go ahead and be standing in Rosh Sarabim and lob an object onto a Rosh Sayachid, and that object were to extend it to the Makom Patur of the Rosh Sarabim and come back down to Rosh Sayachid, you in fact would not be biblically chayav. Of course, it's the Asur Midrabanan, but you would not be chayav for such an act. But the Gemara is setting all of these cases up as situations where, and now the other thing we also learn from this is that if you have a Rosh Sayachid that has crevices or protrusions that extend into the area of the Rosh Sarabim, that those crevices or protrusions would have the status of what? Of the Rosh Sayachid itself. Okay, so the Gemara says like this. Boy Rabbi Yochanan. Amar Rav Meisha. Meisha said, Boy Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan has the following shah. Listen to this. Kostel Rosh Sarabim. If you have a wall in Rosh Sarabim, Gavoa Yud, Ve'in Arach of Arba. So listen to this. You have a wall in the Rosh Sarabim that is 10 tefachim high, but is not 4 wide. But look what it does. Mukaf the Carmelis. Now, what you do with this wall is you use this wall to enclose the Carmelis. Now, remember, what is a Carmelis? A Carmelis is this area, that is not a Rosh Sarabim, and it's not a Rosh Hayachid. But here's what's interesting. If you enclose a Carmelis, what can you do? You can make it into a Rosh Sayachid. The Asor Rosh Sayachid. So now I've used this wall to enclose the Carmelis and make it into a Rosh Sayachid. And what happens? And now I throw an object, and the object comes to rest on top of the wall. So now what's the Shaila Mahu? What's the Halacha? Mi Amrinan Kevan Ve'ino Rachav Da'al Mbakom Ptorhu O Dilma Kevan Da Asor Rosh Sayachid Kiman Demali Damya. But listen to this fascinating Shaila. So the question is like this. The wall itself does not have the dimensions of a Rosh Hayachid. On the other hand, it's the wall itself that creates the Rosh Hayachid inside. So once it creates the Rosh Hayachid inside, we essentially say that once the Rosh Hayachid is viewed as if it's totally full. Totally full. Like that, let's say it's mamish, it's full. So therefore, you understand when I say it's full, we actually had this image before that the Gemara says that if you throw the object through the house, right, so that's just if the house is full, meaning it's if, yeah. So you essentially, when we say it's full, is you would view the Rosh Hayachid as completing the shear of the wall. So do we really? What the Gemara is asking is like this: that if the wall itself is what creates the Rosh Hayachid, is the wall itself given the status of Rosh Hayachid, despite the fact that what, that it does not have the real full dimensions of Rosh Hayachid? Amar Ula Kavachomer. So this is, of course, what's the shayla? If the wall is what makes the area inside Rosh Hashayachid, then what? Then the wall itself has to be a Rosh Hashayachid. So the Gemara says, "Itmar Nami." Rabbi said that part says, "Amar Rabbi Chaver Ashi Amar Rav V'chinu Rabbi Yitzchok Amar Rabbi Yochanan." Kol sal b'Rosh Hashayachid gavoa yod ve'in arach avarba. If you have a wall that's in Rosh Hashayachid, that's 10 high, but does not have the width of 4, umukaf la karmelis, and it encloses the karmelis, vasor shesuyachid, in order to make it into a shesuyachid, hazorik v'hanach, vazorik v'nach agabav, if one either throws an object from the top of that wall into a shesurabim, or from a shesurabim and lands on the top of that wall, the halacha is chayif. Right? Sorry, vasor shesuyachid, hazorik v'nach agabav, chayif. So the Gemara says the following: why? If it makes a mechitza for others, i.e., if it makes the Carmelis into a Rosh Hayachid, is it itself certainly not considered a Rosh Hayachid? By Rabbi Yochanan, Bar Tisha va'akar menuchulya ve'shimu la'asar. Suppose another interesting case: if you have a pit that is 9 tefachim deep, watch this case. This is fascinating. 9 tefachim deep, and what happens? You have a 1 tefach thickness of dirt, a 1 tefach thick clod of dirt. Dirt that you remove from the bottom of the pit. Okay? Now watch this. And now what happens? You remove that one tefach thick cloud of dirt. What have you done? keep saying dearth, of dirt, you make the pit, you give the pit the requisite shear. So watch this. Mahu, what's the halacha? Akiras chefetz. Rabbi said, listen to this case. So now what are you doing? So listen to how fascinating this is. You're picking up the one tefach, thick clod of dirt, and you're taking it out of the pit, and you're going to put it down into the Rosh Hasharabim. So now what's the shayla? The shayla is, listen to this. Mahu, akiras chefetz va'asiyas mechitze bahadi hadadi ka'asu mechayiv. Do we say that there's a simultaneity that occurs over here? Your act of hotzah is ultimately what creates what? It's your act of hotzah that creates the Rosh Hashayachid. So therefore again, simultaneity says yes, you can be chayiv simultaneously for the creation of the mechitza, for the creation of the Rosh Hashayachid, while transferring the item as well. However, lo mechayiv. Or maybe no, maybe in order to be chayiv, what do you have to have? You have to transfer, because remember, you can make the cogent argument that when you did the Akira, you didn't do the Akira from Rosh Hashayachid. Where did you do the Akira from? And it's only afterwards that it became. Or, so do we say simultaneity? That the Akira and the making of the Roshas can occur simultaneously? Or we say no. The only time you're chayiv is when you actually remove an item from an already established Roshas. Vimtin Salomar, Kevin de Lahavi Mechitza Asara Meikar Lo Mechayiv. And if you're going to say that because it wasn't a formal Roshas, that it really it didn't have a depth of 10, at the initial when you're doing the Akira, that you're not going to be chayiv, Bor Yud. So what about the reverse case? Let's say you have a pit that's 10 tefachim deep, and what do? You throw a clod of dirt that's 1 tefach thick into it. So what have you effectively done? You have diminished the shear of the pit. So what do you say in that case? Mahu, hanachas chefetz, v'siluk mechitza b'hadi adadika asu. Do we say simultaneity? Now both say simultaneity, they will result in what? Will result in a p'tur. Because then it turns out that your act of transferring wasn't really a bona fide act of transferring. Why? Because your act of transferring actually diminished the shiurim of the pit. Oh, lo mechayiv. Oh, we'll say no, you won't be chayiv. So the Gemara says, tifshot lay mididei. So the Gemara says, let's go ahead and resolve this issue from within. The Gemara says, disnan hazorik arba amos pekosa lemala me'asar tefachim kizorik ba'avir. If you go ahead and you throw 4 amos at a wall. Now, what it means is you're standing in a shtarabim, and the object travels 4 amos. And what happened? And if the object, it lands on 10 tefachim high of the wall, kizorik ba'avir, it's as if you're throwing in the air, which means you didn't do anything significant, because l'mala miyud is makom p'tur. However, l'mata me'asara, if you throw the object within 10 tefachim, kizorik ba'aret, it's as if you're throwing on the earth itself. V'azorik ba'aret arba amos chayiv. And if you throw something on the earth, meaning if you throw across the shtarabim, chayiv 4 amos, v'havina baba, yes, v'halonach, but the object doesn't come to rest. Right? So why would you be chayiv? Am Rabbi Yochanan, b'dveila shemena shaninu. What are we talking about? We're going to see this case actually tomorrow's Gemara. We're talking about a cake of pressed figs, a thick cake of pressed figs. Now, what's the reason why it does it? Because it's shmalzi. So it sticks to the wall. So the Gemara says, but one second, why should you be chayiv now? So we'll say, now, here's the case. So we're suggesting, I'm standing 4 amos away from the wall. I throw the cake of pressed figs. It lands against the wall within 10 tefachim of the ground. So what does the Gemara say? I'm chayiv. But why should I be chayiv? She's Gemara, listen to this. V'amai ha'kamen ma'it ma'arba amos. Now both say, in reality, has the cake of pressed figs traveled 4 amos? No. Why? Because the thickness of the cake extends back into the 4 amos, which means that perhaps the edge of the cake that stuck to the wall maybe traveled 4 amos, but the rest of the thickness did not travel 4 amos. So the Gemara says, what do you see from there? So, and yet, what does the Gemara say? You chayiv. So the Gemara says, Hasam lo mevatale, hocha mevatale. What's the distinction, Rabbo say? That in that case, a person is not mevatale. Look at Rashi. Hasam lo mevatale, dveila, Hilchach lav miyotu. So we'll say, here's the chab. When it comes to the cake of pressed figs, a person doesn't intend on leaving it there. Because a person doesn't intend on leaving it there, therefore halacha lemaisa is not considered to be part of the wall. Because it's not considered to be part of the wall, therefore halacha lemaisa we treat it as if it traveled the entire way. Masha'enkein, when a person intends on leaving the object in the place to which it's being transferred, then halacha lemaisa, in fact, it does count as a miyot. Now, what the Gemara would suggest based on this is that halacha lemaisa, therefore, according to this approach, if you were to go ahead and throw the clod of earth into the pit that's 10 tefachim deep, and thereby diminishing the dimensions of the pit, it could very well be that halacha lemaisa, you would not be chayiv, because your intent is to leave it there, and therefore you have effectively thrown the object into an area that does not have the requisite shear for the pit. The reason why that we don't view the figs as taking up additional space is because halacha lemaisa, your intent is not to leave it there. All right, we'll stop. We'll stop over here. We're going to pick up this sugya Mirat Hashem tomorrow.
Apparently, the first one is going where you're taking it out.